this is completely ridiculous on multiple levels. I mean, there's so many things going through my head right now. This doesn't belong to you. You haven't even been here in the past calendar year. And the fact that anybody even voted for John Cena to be Superstar of the Year is absolutely atrocious. This is possibly the worst year of John Cena's life. He got beat by a guy that I'm gonna decimate at the Royal Rumble. I beat him at SummerSlam. He lost last night. He's the first superstar to cash in his Money in the Bank contract and lose. He's a loser like everybody in Philadelphia, and he's a loser like you. You know, I used to sit in the locker room and listen to Shawn Michaels talk about how all he ever wanted to do was grow up and be Ric Flair. Look at me, Flair. I never wanted to be you. I never wanted to be anybody but me, and I did it. And last year, I was Superstar of the Year. That means this year, I'm Superstar of the Year. I've been WWE Champion for 393 days. 393 days! I'm the man, not John Cena, and not you. I'm the man. Woo!
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live.
You sit there on your ranch with your wife and your kids.
Lesnar's got Cena! The
your source for news.
Marry me, AJ!
Views and opinions on everything wrestling.
This is not a popularity contest. This is not ballet.
I'm not a CM Punk guy.
From the big leagues. To the local scene.
This never would have happened when Michael Sweetser was running things.
Where is Michael Sweetser?
Now.
Ryback is feasting. Jericho, he's got a timeout.
But I do have something for Stephanie.
I am going to walk in to Hell in a Cell to fight.
The 2012 Year in Review.
It's slobber knocker good.
Oh, man. A pro kick by Sheamus. A hook of the leg. And he did it.
Here's James McDonald.
A brand that is good for business, Sean.
And Corey Callahan.
On top, swimming with sharks while you're dancing with stars.
It's December 20th, 2012, the final Thursday before the big day. Happy holidays, everyone. We're breaking down the week it was in pro wrestling. This is Smack Talk Radio Live. And sitting in the Smack Talk studios in Vancouver, I'm Corey Callahan, right beside the guy who will probably hit the jackpot on a scratch and win over Christmas, James McDonald. James, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing awesome, buddy. Are you ready for Christmas, man?
No.
You're not ready
at all.
For Christmas? I am so ready for Christmas that I feel like belting out a Christmas carol or something. Can you cut that background music for a second? Let me just belt something out here.
You're going to put us in the mood, are you?
Put us right in the mood here. On the 12th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 12 slaters slating, 11 pipers piping, 10 tables smashing, 9 chairs a-shotting, 8 jobbers jobbing, 7 Nexus members, 6 of AJ's exes, 5 moves of doom.
Oh, man.
450 splash, 3 MB2 tag team champs, and an RKO out of nowhere. Thank you.
Unbelievable.
Can you tell I'm in the mood? Huh?
Nice job, my friend.
Very excited tonight. We're going to be breaking down the year that was in the WWE. This is our big year-end review show.
Yes, the year-end review for 2012, switching it up from our normal show on Smack Talk Radio Live. You pumped, James?
I am. I just belted out a Christmas carol. Can you not tell I'm pumped?
Hit up our website, www.smacktalkradiolive.com. Subscribe to us in the iTunes store if you haven't already. Or hey, send a friend to @SRLRadio. Now let's just find out. James, where are you with your Christmas shopping? Have you bought my gift yet? And have you bought everyone else's gifts?
Oh, buddy. I'm about 15% done by Christmas shopping, to be honest with you.
That's smarter than me.
I gotta go bang it all off this weekend. But hey, that does not hamper my love of the holiday season, not one bit. I like going out there and I like fighting the crowds and going tooth and nail for that deal item. So yeah, it's gonna be good.
There is one advantage to waiting to the very last minute to do your Christmas shopping. The mall's packed, and With the malls being packed, brings pretty ladies.
Absolutely.
They all dress up to the nine the weekend before Christmas, do they not?
Yeah, absolutely, man.
That's purposely why I wait.
Especially here in Vancouver.
I'm just joking. But hey, there might not even be a weekend this weekend, James. The world's supposed to end today, I believe. Well, Mayan calendar?
Isn't it already the 21st in Australia?
I think we're going to be okay. What do you think?
I don't foresee any fiery apocalypse anytime soon.
No. Now, let me just bring up the SRL 2012 year-end awards. We announced it on our website. Huge show happening December 27th.
Monumental.
Now, what that is, what it's going to be is we're expanding the idea that we came up last year. You know, there are a lot of podcasts that have year-end awards. But one thing we're going to be doing differently this year is we're going to be doing a panel that...
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's...
That is filled with people that surround the wrestling industry. I mean, we have some wrestlers involved. We have analysts. We have you and I, for example. We got Corey Basso taking part. So what we've done is we've sent out an email to these people. They are going to give us their thoughts on what they thought the best of and worst of was in professional wrestling. And then we're going to tabulate the votes with all the categories.
Hmm.
And on December 27th, we're going to have our year-end awards. And we're going to announce just who are the winners of these categories. We have categories like Best Match of the Year, Best Pay-Per-View of the Year. And then we also have categories such as Worst Gimmick of the Year.
Worst Commentator of the Year.
Oh, yes, that's right.
No, I got to admit, that was a very good idea by you, gathering this panel together and trying to get a conglomeration of opinions instead of just you and I spouting off what we thought was the best and worst stuff. So, no, that's a very good idea by you. I got to give you props for that.
And we also are opening it up to the fans or the listeners of this show. We are going to, well, we've posted it up on the website. If you haven't seen already, all you got to do is head to our website, copy and paste the email template that is on at the top of our page. There's a tab at the top of our page, sorry. You click that. Copy and paste the email. Send it to onair@smacktalkradiolive.com like you always do when you send in your thoughts and opinions on the week it was. And we're going to compare the panel's thoughts and opinions on the year of with the online listeners' thoughts. So it's going to be a very interesting show.
Yes.
Lots to go over. And that's happening December 27th, like I said. But tonight, though, James, it's a completely different story. Because before we get to the year-end awards, and before we just decide what is the best of and the worst of, we probably should decide, or we should probably go back and review just what happened this
year. Just to freshen ourselves and everybody who's listening, right?
And that's what's happening tonight. Now, before we get to that, James, let's talk about it. We had a big week here in professional wrestling. Just quickly, starting with TLC, the pay-per-view that happened on Sunday. You watched it. What did you think of it?
I was pleasantly surprised. It turned out to be a much better show than I originally anticipated it to be.
Mm-hmm.
The TLC match between The Shield and Ryback and Team Hell No, that was a really, really, really good match. And I thought it was booked fantastically. It protected the guys that needed to be protected. And it was a great showing by The Shield. And I think there's a big future in store for these three guys.
I actually only got to see one match at TLC. And that's just because of time constraints. I'm trying to fit everything in here this last week before Christmas. So I didn't get to see the full pay-per-view. I did manage to get the TLC match that did involve Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, and Dean Ambrose versus...
Team Hell No and Ryback.
Team Hell No and Ryback.
You really didn't see the pay-per-view.
No, I saw it. I had it written down here, and I just lost my spot.
I got to call you on that. Come on now.
Come on. Now, this is what I thought about the match. You know, I thought it was a great first match for these three guys, and I loved every spot during the match. I mean, the Ambrose chokeslam through the chair, that was awesome. Seth Rollins being thrown off the ladder, that's got to be one of the highlights of the year. Every spot in this match delivered, and this is the type of match where it didn't matter if you won or lose because everyone coming out of this match was a winner. And it's just, everyone comes out looking great at the end of this one.
I'm glad actually that The Shield ended up going over because I thought if they had been defeated in their very first match, it would have taken away a lot of their momentum. So,
well, one thing I was saying last week on the show when I was, you know, extremely positive was the fact that you can't kill Ryback's momentum here. If you did, I thought it would be a bad decision. But that didn't happen, even though he lost. And it's just that this match delivered on so many levels. It's the way wrestling should be. That's the way it was just like, it was that feeling that anything could happen at any moment. And the fans in Philadelphia were awesome. The match delivered in every aspect. And I just thought that even though Ryback lost, there was no momentum lost. He still comes out looking really good here, as do Daniel Bryan and Kane.
All right, all right. Who the hell are you and what did you do with my co-host? Because you are not Corey Callahan.
Must be the Mayan calendar. Holy. I'm having a revelation. I'm trying to stay positive.
This is almost like a 180 from last week. You actually like something.
You know what? I wasn't going to get into it, but let me just say this. A lot of people agreeing with me. A lot of people disagreeing with the way I talked last week. And let me just say this. It's not the specific storylines that are bugging me about professional wrestling. It's just the way wrestling is broadcast. It's the way that wrestling has become. And deep down, for me personally, I wish it was just done differently. That being said, it's never going to go the way I want it to. No. I know that. I have to come to terms and accept that. And if I don't, and if I can't, then I'll never be able to start enjoying the product. So I have to turn it on inside my head.
Focus on the things that you enjoy, as opposed to as opposed to just pounding on all the negatives. Because I agree with you. There is quite a few negatives, but I mean, it is what it is, and you kind of got to take it with a grain of salt. I mean, I'm in the same boat with you. There's a lot of stuff about wrestling today that I don't like, and a lot of it for me stems from the creative process and just how they ignore logic and continuity a lot of the time.
There's one word that really hits it on the head for me, and a lot of people, and the majority of wrestling fans, I should say, have come to terms with this word, and I just have a hard time doing that, and really, I can't do it, and that's the word tolerate. They want you to tolerate the product, whether it's good or bad. And for me, I'm such an outspoken person that I have a hard time tolerating the product. I wouldn't tolerate a cold meal at a restaurant. So why would I tolerate a bad product that I'm seeing on television?
Yeah.
And again, this whole...
No, I do see where your argument comes
this
from.
This whole show, of course, is thoughts and opinions from wrestling fans. I'm going to have a different opinion than you, much like you're probably going to have a different opinion from Corey Basso. The whole focus of this show is to start a conversation about professional wrestling.
And to get that dialogue moving, essentially.
And if you don't agree with me, let's hear from you. Send us an email on air at Smack Talk Radio Live and tell me where to shove it.
Okay. Right? Okay, I think we wasted enough time here.
All right, how about the Monday Night Raw this week? The annual
Slammy Awards. You know what? I have to say, that was probably one of the most enjoyable Raws that I've seen in weeks here. I liked seeing the Boogeyman come back. I think they used Ric Flair better in 15 minutes than TNA used him in 3 years.
Mm-hmm. That's funny.
You know, and you know what? Seeing Big E Langston at the end of Raw like that, this guy's got big things in store for him. Now, I don't know if you follow NXT.
No, I'm not as familiar with him as you are.
No, well, I've seen him wrestle a few times on NXT, and I have to say, this guy is pretty impressive. And the one big thing that I have to say he's got going for him is he's got an ally in Jim Ross. Jim Ross says this guy has the it factor, and if you got somebody like Jim Ross on your back, good things for your career. I enjoyed Raw, definitely.
Are you going to call him the nickname that you said to me earlier off air?
Oh, God. Why would you even bring that up?
All right, don't do it. If you want to know, send me an email. I'll let you know. What about the Slammy Awards itself? Did you enjoy the Slammy Awards?
Well, I have to agree with some of the awards, and some of them I don't agree with. I definitely agree with the match of the year going to Triple H and Undertaker. I mean, you and I were both there live, and we saw just what an amazing atmosphere and what an amazing story those two guys told.
Mm-hmm.
But the one I have to really disagree with is giving a Superstar of the Year to John Cena. How could you overlook CM Punk? The guy who's going on a 400-day title reign.
Let's just be realistic here. The reason why they gave it to John Cena was so that Punk could come out and have that extreme heel heat. And it worked. I thought that CM Punk promo with Ric Flair after Cena had won Superstar of the Year was awesome.
And that's one thing that I have to say that I don't like about the Slammy Awards is it feels like the winners of the Slammy Awards is just... they're there merely to be a setup for the next segment or for the next thing going forward.
I know. That's,
you know what I mean?
That's what I was trying to get at last show where we were talking about the Slammies. Let me say this. The Slammy Awards could be something spectacular. In sports, you have the ESPY Awards that are put on by ESPN. Those are legit awards. Athletes work all year and they're rewarded with these awards that the major sports network in the United States offers to them and delivers. And with the Slammies, it could be awesome if it was 100% legit. Now, I'm not saying the WWE needs to go out and copy what Smack Talk Radio Live is doing with a panel of experts or
that'd be cool if they did.
But yeah, that would be cool if they did. It would be really awesome if they had a show dedicated to the Slammies where it was 100% legit. And there was a sense of credibility and prestige around winning these awards. These are awards that could be like the Oscars for the wrestlers.
No, I totally agree with you.
But instead, it's just part of the show. And that's the thing that I really don't like about the Slammies.
Mm. Yeah, I just didn't like how the presentations were essentially setups for the next segment or whatever. You know what I'm getting at, right? You were essentially trying to get the same thing last week.
My point, though, is like, you know, make the Slammies legit, and I think it'll do way better in the end. So here's a question for you. I brought it up on the preview, James. We saw all these returning superstars this past Monday Night Raw. I mean, you had Billy Gunn, you had the Boogeyman, you had Ric Flair. I had mentioned this before. Does it take memories from the past to make the current product exciting? Because this week's Monday Night Raw was a complete 180, in my opinion, from the one before this, before that. And Monday Night Raw was really fun and entertaining to watch this week. The one difference is between this Raw and other Raws is you had these former stars. And it's weird. It's like I'm getting out of my seat for these guys. Now, obviously, these guys are not going to be they're not going to be able to deliver that excitement each and every week.
No, they can't do that every week for sure.
But the one-off every once in a while works. But were you finding yourself more excited about this Raw than previous Raws in the past?
Oh, definitely. It's always fun to see some of these old guys come back and you get that wave of nostalgia wash over you.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to your original question, do we need to see the old guys to make the product interesting? I think you need to see a mixture. You need to see a mixture of some of the old, more established guys come in and maybe give a little bit of a rub to the newer guys to kind of make a name for them type thing.
Does it say something about the current generation of wrestlers when the only thing, not the only thing, but one of the major things getting us excited are returning stars from the past?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think a big reason they do it is to keep, well, guys like you and me happy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they can't focus 100% on guys like us, and they can't focus 100% on the younger guys, on the younger, you know, the kids and stuff like that, right? So they gotta find a happy medium for both, and I think that's kind of what this was.
Interesting. All right. Leave it at that.
Sure.
Now, why don't we talk about what tonight's episode's all about, the 2012 year interview. We're not going to do the post-to-post this week, James. Post-to-post report, I should say. We just don't have time.
Or the local wrestling scene.
Or the local wrestling scene, and that's just because we got so much to get to. We're running down an entire year in the next, what, half hour, 45 minutes?
Here goes nothing.
All right, let's kick it off. The 2012 year in review.
The 2012 year in review.
Woo! I'm still this boy!
Hey, it happened in 2012. Ric Flair returning to the WWE, so you can play that clip there, James.
Yes, and you know what? I am loving it. The more Ric Flair I see, the better. I've always been an old school fan, and Ric Flair, I mean, come on, he's one of the greats. Now, here's a question I got for you. Are we going to see Ric Flair work a match after Jerry Lawler just had this heart attack?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I believe that we've seen the last of Ric Flair in the ring. I mean, ultimately, Shawn Michaels did end his career, remember? And
that
I think
true.
The Jerry Lawler incident really has changed things for Ric Flair. That being said, WWE is much better with Ric Flair involved. I enjoyed seeing him. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens from here on out.
I hope they find some sort of role for him. If he's not going to work matches, make the guy a manager. Make him a general manager. Do, you know, make up some weird-ass position for him like you did with Vicky. Something, right? You got to have him on TV because he definitely adds to the program, I think, rather than detracting from it.
And that would be the big question at this point. Where does Ric Flair slot into the current lineup and just what role will he have? So, hey, I'm all for it at this point.
Me too.
Now, before we get to the year of 2012, let's try and put ourselves back at the end of 2011 and just try to remember what questions we had heading into the new year.
Let's just jump in the DeLorean and head back 365 days.
That's right. Now, remember this question, James. Just what would be revealed on January 2nd, 2012? I don't know if you remember, we had these promo vignettes with that little boy and the little girl in the school desk.
Oh, that's right, and it's going to be the end of the world and blah de blah de blah. Yeah, I do remember that.
And it didn't turn out to be anything that we thought it was. Well,
Some people thought it was. I was surprised.
Chris Jericho. Yeah. Returning to the WWE.
Quite the return, too. Comes out, huge babyface reaction. Doesn't say a word, though.
That was the most beautiful promo.
I've never, ever seen somebody turn heel without doing something. Like,
I love that.
And I mean, only somebody like Chris Jericho could pull something like that off, to be honest.
It was just such a great idea.
It was different. It was different. It was fresh. And like we mentioned before on this show, anything different and fresh is a good thing. So.
And isn't it funny that that happened on January 2nd, and we're at the end of the year and Chris Jericho's already gone?
Well, the game did his thing and left.
Reaped his paycheck and hit the road. How about this question heading into 2012? Would The Undertaker even wrestle at WrestleMania 28? You know, a lot of people were wondering, would The Undertaker even go for 20-0? Because it wasn't confirmed that he would.
That's right. I remember he was, he was just so banged up after his match at WrestleMania 27 with Triple H that it was really up in the air whether he was going to work the show next year, right? So.
How about this question, the one I love to talk about? What was happening with the WWE Network?
Oh my God, we have no answer now, and here we are 365 days later, and we're still same spot. Nothing's changed.
Remember they had said that the WWE Network would launch on the night of WrestleMania 28?
Yeah, first it was going to be April 1st, then it was going to be the fall, then it was going to be the winter, and now here we are, December 20th, and we haven't moved forward one inch than we have, a year ago this time.
In fact, now there are more questions than there were before.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Will we actually see the Legends House when the network actually gets launched? Like, do people still want to see that show?
Oh, I definitely do. That's such a neat little premise. I mean, you got all these old legends. Like, I just want to see it for the Iron Sheik alone. For me, the Sheik sells the show.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's a really cool little premise. It's like... I don't know, WWE Legends Big Brother type thing. So hopefully we see something.
And how about the biggest question heading into 2012? It would have to be John Cena versus The Rock.
Wow.
We had the year build-up rivalry from WrestleMania to WrestleMania. That had to be the big question heading into January.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was a match that had almost, Hogan and Andre hype to it. I mean, you really didn't know which way this was going to go, and it's very rare to see something like that in wrestling nowadays.
And just what they were going to do with these two.
Yeah, because, you and I, we discussed it at length, and it's like, geez, we couldn't see The Rock losing, and then on the other hand, we couldn't see Cena losing either. So it was we just didn't know how it was going to go, and that was great. You don't have that.
That's what I was going to say. It was exciting.
Yeah.
It was an exciting program in January. It's just a shame they didn't get on with it earlier.
No kidding.
All right. Let's kick off the 2012 year in review. How about we do that? Now, before we do that, James, let's just try and figure out how we're going to do this, because that was a big question. We could go month to month to month to month, but that might be a little hard to do. So, James, let me just give you credit. You have done an excellent job writing the year in review trying to remind people just what has happened in 2012. So what you've done is you've split...
I split the year into three segments. I'll take it from here. I split the year into three segments. The first segment being January, February, March, the time between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. And then the second part of the year, I split it between Extreme Rules and SummerSlam, which is kind of like, your second part of the year. And then the last segment, of course, is Night of Champions leading up to Tables, Ladders, and Chairs, which just happened on Sunday.
I think that's a good way to do it. And let's start it off in January to March, and let's start with John Cena, who John Cena was in a feud with a newly returned and masked Kane, who would repeatedly attempt to get Cena to embrace the hate.
Ugh.
Remember that line?
God.
And Kane tried to get Cena to embrace the hate by attacking his friends, even Zack Ryder, injuring the latter in the process. This would lead to a singles match at the Royal Rumble, which ended in a double countout, and an ambulance match at the Elimination Chamber, which Cena, he'd win to end the rivalry. Thank God.
No kidding.
Cena would then move on to his year-in-the-making program with The Rock, and the two would exchange verbal barbs in innovative and sometimes shocking promos before their climactic encounter at WrestleMania 28, in which The Rock ended up coming on top.
I gotta say, the starting of 2012 here in regards to John Cena, it was just It was almost painful to watch him go through this embrace the hate storyline with Kane and Eve and Zack Ryder, and it was just, and I mean, you and I, we both knew all this was time filler before, you know, until The Rock became available work in their program.
It was so painfully obvious that it was time filler while we waited for The Rock, and it was like, to me, I remember saying it was killing all momentum for John Cena just before he goes up against The Rock, because here you go from what quite possibly could end up being the worst feud of the year to one of the best feuds with The Rock at WrestleMania.
One big memory that stood out in my mind, you remember when Zack Ryder bounced off the pallet? Remember Kane chokeslammed him off the loading dock and he like bounced?
But one thing I will remember about what we had just read there is that The Rock beating John Cena at WrestleMania 28 in Miami.
It's a match for the ages. That's all you got to really say about it. I mean, the build up to it was just amazing. These guys both came out there, killed it week after week on the mic, especially Cena. If you go back and listen to our shows leading up into WrestleMania 28, I thought Cena was getting the upper hand on The Rock from week to week.
I don't think anyone thought The Rock was going to win, especially the way he did. Clean.
Yeah, it was just... You could not tell, and it was it's one of the most amazing things in wrestling when you have that. When you've got a mega match like that, you just can't tell who's going to win because you can't see one guy losing and you can't see the other guy losing. So what's going to happen?
And it was just one of my favorite moments in wrestling of all time. You and I sitting there live in Miami. And
I know you got Dwayne Johnson on speed dial, so of course that was one of your. Favorite moments. So, but anyways, moving on with the beginning of the year here, CM Punk. Now he was embroiled in a feud with Raw general manager John Laurinaitis to start the year off, and this would lead to a title match against Dolph Ziggler at the Royal Rumble, with John Laurinaitis being the special enforcer. Now Punk would win the match and then move on to a program with a freshly returned Chris Jericho, while retaining the title in the Raw Elimination Chamber match. Now, Jericho, he would earn the number one contender spot for the WWE title, even after he fell short in the Elimination Chamber, by winning a six-pack challenge on Raw, and the two would build their rivalry on the premise that Punk was imitating Jericho by calling himself the best in the world. Now, this, of course, would lead up to their confrontation at WrestleMania 28, which Punk would eventually win by tapping out Jericho with the Anaconda device.
Looking back at CM Punk versus Chris Jericho, would you say it was a successful program, or do you wish it went a little differently?
Oh, I thought it was a very successful program. I thought these guys had some very good promos cut against each other. Their match at WrestleMania itself was an amazing match that went back and forth. You didn't know who was going to win that one either, and yeah, it sold for me.
I thought it was interesting. I just thought they were going to feed off that best in the world a little more than they did.
Really?
It was there, but it wasn't like the prominent figurehead for their program. The alcoholism and the shots at each other regarding that was the premise of that program, if I remember correctly.
Oh, after WrestleMania a little bit more, but leading up into WrestleMania, it was all over who's imitating who and who's the best in the world and stuff like that. And the one thing I liked about it, going back and remembering now, was the way that they got Jericho that number one contender spot, because everybody thought that he was going to win the 30-man Rumble match.
He was
going to win the match.
He was a strong candidate to win the Royal Rumble.
And especially when he came down to the final two, which we'll talk about in a second here. But yeah, everybody thought he was going to win the Rumble match, but he didn't, which was a huge shocker. And then he won that six-pack challenge, which is a very good match. I don't know if you remember that, Rob, but that was a really good match. And it was a great program. That's all I can say.
Well, why don't we talk about the Royal Rumble? And let's talk about the guy who ended up taking the Rumble, and that would be Sheamus. Now, Sheamus would start off his strong 2012 by, like I said, winning the 30-man Royal Rumble match after eliminating the final contestant, Chris Jericho, by bro-kicking him off the apron. He would then challenge World Heavyweight Champion Daniel Bryan, who himself had won the title by cashing in his Money in the Bank briefcase on The Big Show at the end of the SmackDown Elimination Chamber match by attacking Daniel Bryan after he had won the Chamber match.
That's right.
This would lead to their match at WrestleMania 28, in which Sheamus would shockingly win in 18 seconds after immediately bro-kicking Bryan, and then, well, this was right after kissing his then-girlfriend AJ Lee.
That's right. I mean, that was a huge shocker for me in WrestleMania, the opening match only lasting 18 seconds like that, and it was really that 18-second loss that, you know, you would think that would bury a guy like Daniel Bryan, but it did the exact opposite. It totally made him. It got him super over with the crowd because they all felt jilted that the match was only 18 seconds. And, I mean, Sheamus, what can you say about Sheamus? Here's a guy that they're obviously trying to make one of their top guys. Mm-hmm. They started it off, of course, by giving him a Rumble victory, which is kind of
you know, kind of an accolade that the top guys have. And
what a way to kick off WrestleMania 28 too, with Sheamus versus Daniel Bryan. And that really ticked a lot of people off, as was evident the next night on Monday Night Raw.
Unbelievable, his reaction.
People were pissed that Daniel Bryan had lost within 18
seconds. People were drowning out other segments with the yes chant, if you remember that.
That's right.
So it was just, it was just crazy. Now, also, The Undertaker would return in February to challenge Triple H to another match at WrestleMania because he didn't want the result of last year's match at WrestleMania 27, which he had to be carted out on a stretcher, to be people's lasting image of him. Now, Triple H, he would repeatedly refuse the challenge, saying that The Undertaker's streak, it was good for business. Now, after Shawn Michaels became involved, Triple H would accept the challenge and Michaels would be named the special guest referee. Now, this would lead up to their climactic match at WrestleMania, which is received as Match of the Year. And Undertaker, well, of course, he'd keep his streak intact, moving his record at the grandest stage in them all to 20-0.
What do you say about this?
Unbelievable. First of all, 20-0. That's like Gretzky's records in hockey, man. It's something that's never, ever going to be touched.
You don't think so?
20-0, man? Come on. At WrestleMania, never going to be touched. And what a match. Like, what can you say about just the whole build-up and everything going into it was just fantastic.
The one moment that sticks in my mind from WrestleMania 28 is that moment when Shawn Michaels super kicked The Undertaker, Triple H hits Taker with the pedigree.
Oh, yeah.
And not one person in Sun Life Stadium
70,000 people. 70,000 people thought right there the streak was over. They thought they were witnessing wrestling history, but no. Taker kicked out, and it's just unbelievable. A masterpiece of ring psychology. And then you got Shawn adding the emotional element as the special guest referee. And it was just something beautiful for the ages. That's all I'm going to say.
I think you should probably leave it at that, James.
All right, well, should we move on to the second part of the year then? This being Extreme Rules to SummerSlam, April to August.
Sounds pretty good.
All right. Now, immediately after his WrestleMania loss to The Rock, John Cena would become involved in a program with Brock Lesnar, who's returning to the WWE after an 8-year absence, in which he became involved in the MMA scene and held the UFC Heavyweight Championship, if you can believe it. Now, Brock would return on the Raw after WrestleMania, and he would F5 a stunned Cena after offering him a handshake. This would lead up to their epic confrontation at Extreme Rules, a match that Brock dominated, but Cena won after giving Lesnar an attitude adjustment on the steel steps. The next night on Raw, Lesnar announced that he'd be taking a vacation after failing to renegotiate his contract with John Laurinaitis and confronting WWE COO Triple H, breaking his arm in the process with the Kimura Lock. Brock would then remain off TV for the next few months due to the limited dates in his contract.
So the night after WrestleMania 28, we go into a completely different direction. We have John Cena and Brock Lesnar, of all people, face-to-face in the middle of the ring. Brock Lesnar ends up F5-ing John Cena, and that starts the program that ultimately leads to Extreme Rules. And I gotta say, this was a very interesting way to end the pay-per-view, with John Cena ultimately beating Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, you know what? The match was a really good match. It was like something you'd never seen before. It was very similar to an MMA match almost.
It was like right in the middle between wrestling and MMA. It was very well done.
You had color right off the beginning after Lesnar had bloodied Cena with his elbow like a minute into the match. You had some just crazy spots like Lesnar almost breaking his neck, tumbling over the top rope if you remember. But I mean, it was just Lesnar was just taking Cena to school. And then all of a sudden Cena hits two maneuvers and he wins the match. So
interesting way to start the reemergence of Brock Lesnar back in the WWE. Losing to John Cena was just a very weird decision.
It doesn't make any sense to me. If you're gonna try to push this guy as this big, huge monster, which you should because he is, then why would you have him lose in his very first match back? You know, to me, it's like, why would you pay $5 million to have a guy lie down? It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
You know,
but
gotta say, that Raw after WrestleMania, though, that was something else, man. With Daniel Bryan being so over and then the huge pop for Brock Lesnar returning at the end, it was
an exciting way to start the post-WrestleMania lull, I would like to describe that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're totally right, so.
Now, as for John Cena, he would then move into a feud with general manager John Laurinaitis, and the two would have a match at the Over the Limit pay-per-view, in which Laurinaitis would win due to a heel turn by the Big Show.
That's right, I remember that.
Cena and Show would then begin a program that lasted the next couple of months, with them having a steel cage match at No Way Out.
Back in June.
Yes, that's right, at No Way Out in June, in which the stipulation was John Laurinaitis would be fired if Big Show lost the match. Big Show did lose the match, and Laurinaitis, he's been off TV ever since. Which is an interesting decision, by the way.
Yeah, no kidding.
The two would continue the rivalry heading into Money in the Bank, where they were placed in a Raw Money in the Bank match in which only former WWE champions could qualify. Cena would win the match and the briefcase and immediately announce that he would cash it in on the 1,000th episode of Raw against champion CM Punk. Cena would end up becoming the first superstar to not win the title after cashing in the briefcase due to being disqualified after the Big Show interfered. This would lead to a triple threat match at SummerSlam between Cena, Punk, and Big Show, and this was announced by the new Raw general manager, AJ Lee. Punk, he would eventually retain his title, though.
Yeah, I remember that heel turn. Like, do you remember when Laurinaitis, like, he made Big Show cry in the middle of the ring? Remember how we were all groaning?
Oh, yes.
Remember how we were all groaning at that segment?
And actually, and didn't he fire him?
Yeah, he fired him.
And then brought him back the next week?
Gave him the ironclad contract, and that was kind of what started off the heel turn. And remember, Big Show basically knocked out John Cena, allowing Laurinaitis to get the pin, so...
Hmm.
Yeah. All right, now as for CM Punk, he would continue his rivalry with Chris Jericho after WrestleMania, with the feud becoming a lot more personal as Jericho would bring Punk's family into the mix and continually try to goad him into turning to alcoholism. You remember with the pouring the Jack Daniels on him and smashing the bottle over his head?
Yes.
Which was a problem that Punk's father faced, that being alcoholism. Now, the two would face off at Extreme Rules and in a Chicago street fight, with CM Punk picking up the victory and eventually ending the feud. Now, Punk would then move forward to face a red-hot Daniel Bryan at the next pay-per-view, with Punk going over in what is sure to be a Match of the Year candidate, that being, of course, at Over the Limit. Now, AJ Lee, she would also become involved in the angle as she was being mistreated by Bryan, but was showing feelings for CM Punk. Now, at No Way Out, Kane would then be thrown into the mix, and the three would have a triple threat match set up by Laurinaitis in which Punk, of course, came out on top. Now, Punk and Bryan, they would continue their rivalry heading into Money in the Bank, and AJ, she would actually be named the special guest referee. Punk would eventually win the match and the feud, and surprisingly turn heel after hitting The Rock with a go to sleep on the 1000th episode of Raw after he had that match with John Cena.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this would lead to a triple threat match at SummerSlam between Punk, Cena, and The Big Show, where Punk, of course, he would eke out a victory, keeping his WWE title.
I thought it was some great stuff, CM Punk versus Daniel Bryan.
That was the only thing keeping me interested in the product throughout the summer, I gotta be honest with you.
I did think there were a little too many matches between the two, and that it dragged on a little bit, but that's just my opinion. But one thing I will say about that little period of time there, when CM Punk did ultimately turn on The Rock, that was great stuff.
That was huge. That was the big surprise that you needed to really sell the 1,000th episode as a huge event like it was.
And ultimately set up CM Punk versus The Rock at the Royal Rumble. It was really the first time we'd seen those two interact with each other, and CM Punk getting the upper hand, and it was just a great spot. I mean, how CM Punk had slid into the ring and just decked The Rock.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, no, it really was.
I totally agree.
After WrestleMania, Sheamus, he would continue to feud with Daniel Bryan, with the two having a 2 out of 3 falls match at Extreme Rules, where he would pick up the victory. Sheamus would then begin a months-long program with Alberto Del Rio, 5 to be exact,
jeez,
which lasted from Over the Limit all the way until Night of Champions in September, with Sheamus picking up the victory each time in a series of really mediocre matches.
Yeah, I gotta say, the whole Sheamus Alberto Del Rio thing, it lost its luster for me after the first, you know, 2 pay-per-views. After Over the Limit and No Way Out, I was like, okay, these guys need to move on. But no, just 5 months in a row, if you can believe it, these guys were having a singles match for the World Heavyweight Championship. And you think 3 matches between Punk and Bryan is bad?
And is it bad that I really don't quite remember Sheamus versus Del Rio?
Is it bad that I didn't flush that section out a little bit more? Like,
no, it's not. Yeah, it was just a very mediocre time for the two of them, and that's what it is.
Yeah, it was just strong booking for Sheamus, essentially, is what it was.
Yes,
throughout that
is
part
true.
Of the year.
That is so true.
Now, in July, Raw celebrated its monumental 1,000th episode, with John Cena losing his Money in the Bank cash-in, like we just mentioned, The Rock making an appearance, and a wedding between AJ Lee and Daniel Bryan. Now get this, Bryan, he had proposed to AJ immediately after she had proposed to CM Punk. Now she accepted the offer, and the wedding was set up to be on the 1,000th episode. AJ would then dump Bryan right on the altar, of course, because this is professional wrestling, and Vince McMahon would then reveal that she was the new general manager of Raw. Now this is where Bryan would change his massively over yes chance into No Chance, which was, I thought, really kind of a good idea. Mm-hmm. Now, also on the 1,000th episode was the highly anticipated return of Brock Lesnar to respond to a challenge from COO Triple H, because as we'd mentioned before, Lesnar had broken his arm months earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lesnar would eventually accept the challenge, setting up their main event match at SummerSlam, which was dubbed the Perfect Storm, and Brock would pick up the victory after a brutal, hard-fought matchup.
I don't think either one of these athletes will ever be the same after this.
Triple H again! Triple H again!
Pedigree!
Triple H crawling to the cover. He's got to move this big hoss over on his back. Can he do it? No, he can't! Lesnar counters it on the Kimura lock! The Kimura lock again! Triple H with nowhere to go!
He's going
to
break his arm! He's going to break his arm!
Lesnar wrapped around him like a boa constrictor! Kimura locks in! Hunter's trying to fight! Hunter's trying to hang on! He's trying to survive! Lesnar's gonna break his arm! He's gonna break his arm!
Oh, no, no, he taps!
Triple H tapped down!
Did he break his arm again?
He may well have!
Well, thank God they didn't have Lesnar, you know, put somebody over for the second time. I mean, jeez.
It was close there for a little while.
But I gotta say, this was probably the most exciting match heading into SummerSlam. And I remember SummerSlam not being the greatest show. You know, I don't know. It's, to me, it just didn't feel like a SummerSlam. You know what I mean? It just felt like another one of their B pay-per-views.
Well, the one thing I really had an issue with Triple H versus Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam was, this should be a WrestleMania match. I felt they rushed this. Well, this came out of left field, and I thought they completely rushed this. Because in my head, when I saw Brock Lesnar returning to the WWE, I thought we were going to have Brock Lesnar just run through everyone.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was just about to say.
And ultimately, you would come to a head with the guy in charge of the WWE, Triple H. Really, that's how I saw them setting up Brock Lesnar to WrestleMania. But they didn't do that. They rushed it, and this is what we got.
But Corey, this is going to be a WrestleMania match.
Is that what they're saying?
It's going to be a rematch between Triple H and Lesnar. From the reports that I've read, and of course, everything you see on the internet is true.
Of course.
The only match that's set in stone for WrestleMania 29 at this point is the rematch between Triple H and Brock Lesnar.
I would rather see Brock Lesnar take on The Undertaker if Undertaker is going to wrestle.
I would rather see Lesnar take on anybody other than Triple H. Because, I mean, we've seen it already. And, I mean, I don't know. To me, it just doesn't seem like the wisest use of this guy that you just paid $5 million for, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That's an interesting thing. And now Brock Lesnar's gone after that whole Triple H incident. Like, it was pretty much the next night. He's taking another holiday.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Brock Lesnar thing is very interesting to me.
You can go one way or you can go the other on that. Anything that really stuck out in your mind, you know, with, Over the Limit, No Way Out, SummerSlam?
Well, one thing I wanted to mention was AJ Lee being named the Raw General Manager. That was a huge flop, in my opinion.
Totally.
I didn't like that they had done that Vince McMahon had announced that AJ was the general manager. I was like, this is a mistake. And ultimately, I think they probably agreed with my opinion in the end.
I totally agree with you.
They cut it short.
They did cut it short. And she just, I don't know, she wasn't cut out for that kind of authoritative role, because I think you need somebody who can generate a lot of heat.
Mm-hmm.
And AJ, she was quite the opposite. She was this bouncy little baby face girl, and that's not what you need as an authority figure, you know?
No.
You need somebody that's either going to be, you know, intimidating or is going to generate heat, like Vicky Guerrero or John Laurinaitis, right? Or Vince McMahon, right?
No, I totally agree with that. Why don't we move on to September to December, the last third of the year, James, and that would be from Night of Champions to Tables, Ladders, and Chairs.
Okay, now after he failed to win at SummerSlam, John Cena would continue to feud with the newly heel CM Punk, with Punk declaring on Monday Night Raw that he would give Cena another shot at the title, just as long as Cena would say that he was the best in the world. Now Cena, of course, he would refuse, and General Manager AJ Lee would eventually set up the match between the two at the Night of Champions pay-per-view. Now at the pay-per-view, the two would wrestle to a draw after the ref counted a double pin, and Punk, of course, retains his title. Now Cena, he would remain unable to perform going into Hell in a Cell, and was eventually put into a triple threat match with Ryback against Punk, which he would lose thanks to the Shield. Now after Survivor Series, Cena would begin feuding with Vicky Guerrero and Dolph Ziggler after the former would bring to light allegations of an improper affair between him and AJ Lee. AJ, she was stepped down from her position as general manager of Raw over the allegations, or because they didn't think she was doing a very good job, like we just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And Vicky would be placed in charge of the show by Vince McMahon. Well, and she's what? She's called the manager, supervising manager?
Managing supervisor.
Managing supervisor. Thank you. I don't even pay attention to that garbage anymore.
And why would you?
Exactly. Now, as Vicky brought to light new evidence of this affair each week, a ladder match for the SmackDown Money in the Bank briefcase was made between Ziggler and Cena at the TLC pay-per-view after a little bit of coercion by Vince McMahon with Vicky Guerrero. Now, Cena, though, he would end up losing the match after AJ interfered and turned on Cena, allowing Dolph Ziggler to retain his briefcase. So, right decision, I think, they made in having Ziggler retain his briefcase.
Oh, thank God.
No kidding.
Like what we were talking about last week on the show, the majority probably does want John Cena to beat Dolph Ziggler. But to me, it would have been a slap in the face to the fans.
Oh, big
if
time.
You had Ziggler lose the briefcase. I'm so happy that went down the way it did.
Hey, Arda, I love being right, buddy.
You've been waiting to say that all night. And just how were you right, James?
Well, go back and listen to last week's episode.
Well, I'll remind me. I'm not...
Okay,
I hate listening to myself, so.
I said that I thought AJ was going to somehow cost John Cena the match. Hmm. Arda thought for sure that Cena was going to win the Money in the Bank briefcase because this would set up another confrontation between himself and The Rock, maybe before WrestleMania or during the Royal Rumble mm-hmm. pay-per-view or whatever, but...
It almost seems so obvious that it was going to happen now that it actually has happened, doesn't it? It was like, how else would you have ended that match?
Yeah, I don't exactly.
Cena winning, I guess.
Yeah, there you go, right? So,
This whole thing with Cena and AJ, I'm glad it's over. Let it be done. Let it be in our 2012 year in review, and leave it at that.
I think AJ could be a lot more of an interesting character as a heel than as a babyface.
Where do you go from here with her? Do you actually see her aligning with Dolph Ziggler and kind of forming a relationship with her?
Well,
with
she's
him?
Got, well, as we saw on Raw this previous Monday, she's got some sort of relationship going on with Big E Langston, who was the NXT champion before mm-hmm. he made his...
That's right, actually. No,
before
that's right.
Before he made his call up to the big leagues here. I guess you could call him big leagues.
So, is she already done with Ziggler then?
Who knows?
Man, that girl moves fast. If
who
that's
knows?
True.
Jeez, how many superstars has she been linked to this year? Daniel Bryan, Kane,
way
Cena,
too
CM
many.
Punk, Dolph
way
Ziggler.
Too many.
Jeez, she's like town mattress or something.
Oh wow, that's a bit extreme. All right, let's move on. Now, it was also announced around this time, we began to see the emergence of Ryback. Now, formerly Skip Sheffield from Nexus back in the day. I'm sure we all knew that.
Yep.
And he was being put into the main event picture due to Cena's legitimate arm injury that would prevent him from competing at the following pay-per-view, Hell in a Cell. The match between the two was set up by Vince McMahon after making Punk choose between Cena and Ryback for his next pay-per-view opponent. When Punk took too long to decide, McMahon would declare that Ryback would be his opponent. Now, leading up to the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, speculation ran rampant on whether Ryback would suffer his first loss, or CM Punk would lose the title after an 11-month reign as champion.
Yeah, it was crazy.
In the end, though, it would be the emergence of another new face.
Your favorite.
Referee Brad Maddox, and he would cost Ryback the match by low-blowing him just as he was about to hit the Shell Shock finisher on CM Punk.
CM Punk has had an incredible title reign, but it may end at 343 days.
I think Heyman agrees with you.
Here comes the meat hook. What Ryback calls his clothesline.
And there it is! Meat hook clothesline!
Finish!
And that'll set up Ryback for Shell Shock.
It seems as if winning the WWE title is academic.
Ryback.
Hook is defenseless.
With Puck up. Shell Shock time. Ryback marches around the ring.
About to have a new champion, Michael.
All right, let me begin by saying here, it wasn't just like this Ryback guy came out of nowhere and was thrust into the main event picture with CM Punk. He had been squashing, low to mid-carders for the better part of the year. And it was, like we just said, because of this arm injury that Cena had, that he was finally given his chance to be put up into the main event picture. Mm-hmm. Now, this was a classic example of the creative team at WWE just booking themselves into a corner, essentially. Like,
which I had a huge issue with.
Like, he didn't know what was going to happen here. And like you were saying, yeah, the speculation was just crazy. Like, would we have CM Punk, you know, end his 11-month title reign so we could keep this guy's undefeated streak intact? Are we gonna, make Ryback lose momentum by, you know, losing to CM Punk here?
The one plus was we were introduced to Brad Maddox, and I like that. I don't like how he was introduced, but I do like Brad Maddox, and I think they're misusing him at this time.
Well, it's how else are you gonna end that match, really? Like,
you should never have put yourself in that position if you can't get your way out of it. That's the thing.
Like we were mentioning on episodes of this show around that time, it just goes to show how thin their roster was when it came to top babyfaces, that they kind of had to just, you know, shotgun this guy into the spot to make it work, right?
Mm-hmm. So. For sure. No, I agree 100%.
Now, we would also see around this time a reemergence of the tag team division, with Daniel Bryan and Kane leading the way, eventually working together after their feud with CM Punk and forming a tag team called Team Hell No, after a series of hilarious anger management vignettes, which, remember Harold and... I can't remember the doctor's name, but they were quite funny.
They were pretty good.
I remember Kane doing his thing and the garbage can exploding flames.
It was something different, something we hadn't seen before.
And it was genuinely humorous. So now, going into the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, Team Hell No, they were the tag champs after defeating Epico and Primo for the straps. Now, in the weeks leading up to the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, there was a tournament to determine the number one title contenders on Monday Night Raw. That led up to the finals, of course, being at the pay-per-view. Now, the Road Scholars, consisting of Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow, they would win the tournament, but eventually fall short of gaining the titles at the pay-per-view. Now, Team Hell No, they still remain the current tag team champions.
So. I never understood why you had this big tag team title tournament, you had Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow go all the way to the end, and then lose.
I think it was just WWE's way of saying, okay, we're actually going to put some time and effort back into the tag team division, and we're going to try to make it respectable again.
And that's what I really, really liked about the tag team title tournament, was that people were just talking about tag teams. And that was such a good thing, and it was missing so badly from the WWE.
For the past, like, 5-6 years, their tag divisions were just not...
And this tournament turned it all around.
Well, they started putting together some decent tag teams. I mean, you got Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio now. You got the Primetime Players. Mm-hmm. They're on the up and up. I mean, I love Titus O'Neil and
Uso Darren Brothers.
Young. Yeah, you got the Uso Brothers, which is another great tag team. You got Epico and Primo, which are just extremely, extremely talented. I hate seeing them job all week in and week out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got Daniel Bryan and Kane being...
Is that focus still there on the tag team division here in December?
I wouldn't say. It's probably not as prominent as it was around September, but it's still there. I mean, most of the tag teams are still together.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think all of them are still together.
Sin Cara, by the way, having surgery today. He's going to be on the shelf for a while, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with Rey Mysterio. Because
I'm behind. What happened there?
Well, he was injured at the pay-per-view.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, so they've written him off in storylines, and that's where we are now. So Rey Mysterio is without a tag team partner. Now, after the finish at Hell in a Cell, CM Punk was originally put into a 5-on-5 Survivor Series match as a captain of his team, but the card was changed to Punk defending his title in yet another triple threat match against John Cena and Ryback.
And I think that was due to the bad reaction that the 5-on-5 match got.
They must have been listening to our show that week. The build-up to the match was predicated on Ryback being screwed at the last pay-per-view and Punk and Cena wrestling to a draw in their last encounter at Night of Champions. The match, it was a brutal affair, and just as it seemed Ryback was about to win the title, there was yet another interference finish with three up-and-comers from NXT, and that would be Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, and Dean Ambrose, and they attacked Ryback, allowing CM Punk to steal the pin on John Cena. A few weeks later, Ryback would attack CM Punk at the end of Raw, powerbombing him through a table, legitimately injuring his knee. This would prevent him from competing at the TLC pay-per-view against Ryback, and the new matchup of Ryback and Team Hell No versus The Shield, as the new NXT stable were calling themselves, was made. After a very good match, it would be The Shield coming out on top after pinning Daniel Bryan.
Seth Rollins tossed off the top of the ladder by Ryback.
We're not done.
I think Ambrose and Reigns thought Rollins had everything in...
under control back there. I don't even know if they know what's happened to their partner.
Oh, look at, no. We're going to go for a power bomb.
Oh, through the table! Reigns for the cover! And he got it! The Shield have won!
Now the winners of this match.
The Shield!
The Shield winning their first match here at WWE.
Like we were saying at the top of the show, this was a fantastic match. It turned out to be a lot better than I originally thought it would be. And, you know, it was, I think these guys have a big, big future ahead of them, especially Dean Ambrose. I mean, here's this guy. He's got great mic skills. He's got an innovative look. The guy sells like Dolph Ziggler.
I was going to say he has great facial expressions, which is a huge thing.
He kind of, to me, it seems like he's channeling Heath Slater's Joker a little bit.
I think he's excellent. He plays
this
sadistic role very well. In fact, I'm impressed with all three. I thought all three delivered at TLC. For their first match in the WWE, you couldn't have asked for a better first impression from these three, would you agree?
Absolutely. What did you think about their debut at Survivor Series, though? Were you liking that or no?
No.
You're not a fan of the interference finishes.
No, especially to end a pay-per-view. That's my opinion. I don't like it. I didn't like how they originally debuted. I still stand by my statement last week. What are they protecting us from? What is this injustice? That wasn't explained at TLC pay-per-view, like all three of you ganged up against me and said would be explained at TLC.
Yeah, that was surprising. That was something I didn't mention at the top of the show.
That was never explained.
There was no more explanation, you're right.
And you know what? It never will be explained, I promise you.
Really?
We will never be given an explanation as
to what I don't agree with that. I think we'll get some sort of explanation, or we'll get some sort of revelation about who they're working with or whatever, you know?
No, I disagree.
Okay, you disagree.
I will.
All right. Now, finally, after Night of Champions, Sheamus would begin feuding with The Big Show. And heading into the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view event, heading into the Hell in a Cell, he would begin feuding with The Big Show, with the build-up actually focusing on the two men's finishers, that being the Bro Kick versus the Weapon of Mass Destruction. Mm-hmm. And very well done, I thought. Very old-school style build-up, and I thought these two guys actually had really good chemistry together, at least a lot better than him and Alberto Del Rio, that's for sure.
Oh, I think Big Show's been really good.
At some of his best work in years, absolutely. Yeah. Now, at the pay-per-view, Big Show would dominate most of the match, but Sheamus, he would remain resilient, kicking out of the chokeslam and actually be the first person, Corey, to kick out of Big Show's knockout punch. Now, Big Show, though, he would pick up the win and the title after he deftly dodges Sheamus' second bro kick, and he hit him with that second knockout punch out of nowhere. And I'm telling you, this is, to me, got to be another match of the year candidate, because it was really good. The two would continue their rivalry heading into the Survivor Series and the TLC pay-per-views, with Big Show winning both matches. The first being after the ref bump. Remember when the bro kick hit the referee, and then Big Show pinned him, and the other referee came in and did the count
That's
for him.
That's right, yes.
And then, of course, the most recent being just happened on Sunday at TLC with that huge oversized chair. After he corked him with that huge oversized chair, he picked up the victory. What did you think of that, actually, that big chair?
That's great.
Love that. That was so original. And you know what?
It's up there with his oversized ladder.
That's what I was just about to say. It totally makes sense that you would have a huge chair like that for someone like the Big Show. And you know what? I thought it was very innovative. And it totally threw me for a swerve, because I thought for sure we were going to see the Shield interfere in that and do something. But no, I was proven wrong there, that's for sure. So quite a year, 2012. Wouldn't you agree?
I definitely agree. Now, here's a question for you. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you rank 2012?
2012 on a scale of 1 to 2. Geez, honestly, I'd have to give it about a 5, right in the middle. Because the beginning I was really excited about. The end, now I'm kind of, I'm feeling it. But I'm telling you, that summertime, it was tough to get through some weeks. I mean, geez, go back and listen to some of our shows and see what we felt about what the product was like in the summertime. It was
a year of high and lows for
it
me.
Was, it
because
totally was.
I absolutely love the moment where The Rock beat John Cena. It was one of the greatest moments of wrestling,
okay,
and I don't think it'll ever be topped.
We don't need to hear any more about your boyfriend.
But then in the other side of things, it was just like there were a lot of lows, a lot of times where I was disgusted with what I was watching on television.
Just like the anonymous Raw general manager being revealed to be Hornswoggle. That sticks out in my mind.
God.
It's just one of the biggest groaners of the year, and just that's the kind of thing that bothers me. When we go back to the whole argument about what's wrong with the product, it's just stuff like that. It's just where it's just lazy, and you know they're doing it because they just want to close it off and move forward, you know?
How can you not complain about wrestling when that stuff goes on?
But to me, the biggest positive coming out of 2012 would definitely have to be the way they're setting themselves up for the future here. I think the WWE has a very bright future with the talent that they've got right now. I mean, you've got guys that we haven't even mentioned in our review, guys like Antonio Cesaro, guys like Damian Sandow, for example, you know, guys like Cody Rhodes, the guys in The Shield, Brad Maddox, right? You've got all these new up-and-comers now, Big E Langston just debuting on the past Raw. Okay, they've set themselves up. They've got this group now of new blood. And I think we're going to see some good stuff. I know you probably disagree, but...
Well, no, it just begs the question, where do they go from here heading into 2013? Because really, a lot of open-ended questions with The Shield, with Brock Lesnar, with Ryback, with CM Punk, with John Cena. They do have a solid direction that they are heading as they head into the new year. And the one thing about January, James, is the Royal Rumble is always exciting.
Absolutely. You gotta get up in the morning for the Royal Rumble, that's for sure, right?
No kidding.
But just going back to what I was saying before about setting themselves up for the future, I think the big thing that they were trying to do here, you know, in the tail end of 2012, heading into 2013, is they're really trying to address that depth issue on their roster. And I think they're starting to do a good job. Now they just gotta build these guys up a little bit.
And to me, that was kind of the big flaw about 2012 was the depth. I just felt like it wasn't.
Absolutely.
I mean,
you saw how injuries just completely screwed up their booking. Like, look at Cena's arm injury.
Yeah.
Look at Punk's recent knee injury. I mean, it's just...
Hasn't been a great year in that department.
No.
Rey Mysterio was off TV a lot.
Yeah, Rey Mysterio was off.
Sin Cara.
I mean, lots of injuries. Cody Rhodes got injured. There's just... You know, Mark Henry, for example, he's still recovering from an injury, I believe. Or is he ready to come back? I don't know.
How about moments that just really are going to stand out? I mean, one thing about 2012 I'll never, ever forget was Jerry Lawler having his heart attack.
Yes, that has to be the big one for me, too, is that was such... That was such a moment that really brought back into focus... what am I trying to say here? Really brought back reality. Really brought that back into focus, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at here.
And how about this? Do you remember this moment when the set caught on fire?
Yeah. That was crazy.
Wasn't it?
Like,
that happened in 2012.
Yeah. So, no, there were definitely some interesting moments in 2012.
All right. That'll wrap up the 2012 year in review. Lots to look forward to 2013.
Absolutely. Once again, we apologize. No post-to-post or local wrestling scene tonight. But I mean, 2012 had so much in it that we had to concentrate all our time breaking it down.
I'm sure they understand why. And I gotta say this, James, you wrote that year in review and you did a fantastic job.
Why, thank you. I appreciate you actually building me up instead of cutting me down like you tend to do, my friend.
Let me quickly think of something here.
Okay, we're ending the show now, everybody. Thanks for listening.
I got nothing. All right, well, that will be it for us. The next show for us is the SRL Radio Year End Awards, and that's happening December 27th. Now, to find this show and to find that show that's happening then, you got to go to www.smacktalkradiolive.com. Join in on facebook.com/smacktalkradio. Of course, we're on Twitter at SRL Radio. The big thing, though, I want to stress to people, subscribe to us in the iTunes store.
Absolutely.
If you haven't heard of an app yet called iCatcher, it's for your iPhone. It is great. You subscribe our podcast in iCatcher. And it just automatically comes to your phone every single time you get a Wi-Fi connection.
All you gotta do is open up the app and boom, our show will be downloaded for you.
All right, James, let's get out of here. And from both of us, I just gotta say to everyone out there, Merry Christmas,
absolutely,
Happy Holidays, and we'll talk to you on the other side. I'm Corey Callahan.
And I'm James McDonald. Everybody be safe out there this holiday season.
See you next week.
Merry Christmas. I wanna wish you a Merry Christmas from the bottom.